Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number two of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live from the Fukushima irradiated island chains nation of New Zealand, which is apparently good for the economy because now everybody has a part-time job as an energy saver light bulb. And my very special guests are Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. And I also wanted to get your personal perspectives on this, just sort of a little bit of backgroundiness about yourself. How did you get into these fields of research for which you've devoted your lives?
Do you want to address that first, James?
Since I was 4 years old, I've suffered one anomaly in my life after another. And from that time on, I've been a tagged individual, as I described to Crystal recently. But things have happened, and it didn't make much sense to me. And in the 70s, I was prospecting in Utah and had an experience that woke me up. And I haven't been the same since.
There's something that awesome about that phrase there. In the 70s, I was prospecting in Utah.
Yeah. That's well, there is a place in Utah where there's an EMV operation.
What was it that you saw?
I had been coming back to the camp where we were proving out a claim for some people and to decide whether or not we wanted to lease it. And I'd gone into Grand Junction to get a lot of supplies, and I was coming back across the National Forest, or which is desert. I don't know why they call it National Forest, but it's BLM land. And I was coming across, and it's about a six-hour drive because it's a Jeep trail. And it was between 2:30 and 3 o'clock in the morning. I was tired, and I pulled up on this ridge. And I noticed down in this wash, they're just above, maybe 20 feet above the wash itself, a little bit below where eye level where I was standing, were these series of lights, UFOs, that were going and coming. You could see about 22 at a time. They'd go around, circle around a tower rock, come back, and then they'd go out of sight around a canyon wall. So now, I had already had a number of experiences with UFOs, and I have a medical discharge from the Navy over a UFO incident that occurred in Sasebo Harbor, Japan, just before Christmas of 1962. So I walked down towards the wash, and as I got about halfway down this slope, some of these UFOs broke out of formation and formed a V, but I normally would take this as a threat. This has happened to me before, but I didn't. And I just, for some reason, got the idea very strongly to go back, just lay down, go to sleep in the back of my little Datsun 510 station wagon. So that's what I did. When I woke up in the morning, all I had to do was think about something, and it was like I was accessing files on a computer for the first time, and things that I'd wondered about all my life, things that didn't fit, everything was coming together, and then I began to understand a yearning that I had had all my life, and the yearning was coming from what was deep in the ground there, and your planet is being held together by that operation. Without it, the problems that have accrued over the last quarter of a million years, the presence of mankind here and the abuses to the planet have mounted up so incredibly that this lineage has done things to the earth that or cataclysmic if this operation wasn't there to hold it together. The hydrogen bomb, underground hydrogen bomb explosions that they used to prospect for oil and gas, this has done more damage than these geophysicists can imagine. and your planet come apart. It needs to be restructured. It needs to be, I've warned this, and I can say it. I can say it right now, and that is that if this lineage comes to a point where this depopulation begins in earnest, that you will suffer a massive CME from the sun, the likes of which there is no record. And this planet will become another star. And this will be a binary system. And the people that are prepared to install themselves on Jupiter, well, in the moons of Jupiter where there are people, will have the energy they need to do so.
Continue.
Well, that's the end of the story for you.
Okie dokie.
Well, I mean, you know, there's really so much more to what he's saying, and it's, you know, Dr. Norman Berggren released his first book, The Ringmakers of Saturn, I think in 1984, and he tried to, of course, go through the alternative UFO community, and you know, this is just another example of people that don't want answers, because if people wanted them, they could have them, and he was trying to provide them. He was showing proof that there are entities in our solar system that are creating it, they're building it. And why is that important? Because every time SOHO puts out a satellite image of something, you get these paid trolls and shills that go on all of the forums and all the websites and say, oh, look, the evil reptoids are coming to get us. It's the reverse. It's a lie. Now, the other interesting thing about Dr. Berggren, the last interview that he did was with Kerry Cassidy of Project Camelot, and he explained that there was an attempt on his life to murder him with a poison apple. And also, his safe was robbed, and no attempt was made during that show to ask him what was in his safe. Well, you know, when our controllers, our monsters, however you want to look at them, and which are very, very human, sell the lie that they can go hide off planet, if people had explored Dr. Berggren's work further, they would have discovered that they can't. They won't be allowed to. It won't happen. There was a fungus that was created that was eating the equipment that ruined a lot of their future missions that they planned, which was a very nice way of saying, you're not welcome here. And, you know, the microcosm of our problems and the macrocosm of our problems are reflections of each other, and that we can't run from ourselves. We can't do it. And so when you have people that live in a country where things get really, really bad, they run. They don't deal with it. They run to another country. And because they didn't deal with it where they came from, they let things go. They do it in the new country, and pretty soon the new country becomes just like the old country, because they don't grow enough to understand how to become civilized, how that they are a part of that equation and have to get involved. So in that sense, what James has been trying to explain to people is, it's the same thing up there. What we do here, if we don't grow past it, we will do out there. And that's not tolerable out there any more than it should be tolerable here. And I think what's really been on my mind a lot lately is, I personally can't decide anymore. Is it really that people believe they're powerless, or are they just cowards? And I say that because you hear it all the time, don't you? Well, if you see a psychopath, you better run. The New World Order comes and destroys your country, you better go to South America. There's nowhere for us to run. You hear people say, well, you know, we need a brand new system. We need to scrap the old one because it doesn't function anymore. Well, there were laws in place to make sure that it would function, and everybody looked the other way. We can't run anymore. And people need to get that. We have to deal with what's happening, and there's no good reason why we can't. None at all. It's absurd to me that people will buy into the do-nothingness. You know, religion feeds this with it's mind control. They're cults is really what they are at the basic level, is Well, you know, it's written in stone. God wrote it in stone that you're all going to die a horrible death. So don't fight it. Just say your Hail Marys and wait to get raptured out of here. Of course, for the non-religious folks, that whole myth was rebranded as, well, you can just meditate every day instead of praying. And if that doesn't work, just wait until you get ascended out of here, right? And now you have the ET thing. Well, these people are so far advanced, they can blow up your planet, and on and on and on. So even if you wanted to do something, you couldn't. Those are lies. Every single one of those is designed to encourage the individual to never, ever, ever get involved to determine their own future. And we're not going to have one if people can't recognize that. There's no reason for any of this other than people looking the other way.
This reminds me of a couple of things. Firstly, I think it might have been James White or whatever his name is. I forget his name, but he's an Australian researcher who's published a huge quantity of information about the moon landing hoax, the initial moon landing hoax. And one of the points that I came up with during the interview was, why are we so obsessed was spending huge quantities of money trying to get to the moon anyway, or even into outer space, when we haven't solved or even come close to solving any of the problems that are here. And all we're really going to accomplish by going into outer space is bringing our problems out further into the universe and never solving them. And that was something I thought of. The other part of it is human beings don't realize just how freaking powerful we are. A lot of the cases, you know, like,
right. Yes.
I mean, I know so many activists in New Zealand who have, actually changed government legislation, who have, like my friend Penny Bright, for example, she tried to expose the fact that, say, the Auckland City Council, which is operating under Agenda 21 protocols, was not publishing any of the private contractors' records or anything of that nature. So you didn't know what the term of the contract was, the scope of the contract, how much money or anything of that nature. And she got arrested 22 times by the New Zealand police in the council meetings, and she beat them 21 times in court. And the last one is going to the Human Rights Tribunal at the United Nations, because nowadays what's happening is police don't even come to the town hall meetings anymore if they're asked, because they say no, we can't arrest people out of town hall meetings. She accomplished that, and she also forced them to publish the scope, term, and cost of the private contractors. She did that by herself. Nobody else gave her a hand. That's how powerful we are. One person can force an entire giant evil entity system to come to its knees and bend to your will. That is how powerful we really are. That's just one person realizing their own personal power and not giving up. Imagine if another and another and another started to realize this. Oh, yeah.
That's exactly right. And now, once an individual recognizes that, now you can see why divide and conquer is so important, because we need to work together. But if we're too busy hating each other or being paranoid of each other, or, oh, the brown skin people did it, look, it's like a really bad cartoon, and it's really predictable, where the people that actually robbed the bank go outside and they take their masks off, and the angry people come out and say, which way did they go? And they point to someone else, and everybody grabs their torches and pitchforks and goes running after the wrong people. It's all transference of blame. And not even just transfer of blame, but also transference of the good things we do, right? Oh, God did that for you. You couldn't have possibly done that. A higher power took care of that for you. You know, people need to get involved, and their survival depends on it. There are more of them than there are of us. The problem is, and I say this all the time because I believe it, that I really believe that 90% of the people on this planet are genuinely good people, and they want to do the right thing. But I also know that generations, multiple generations of dumbing them down has ensured they don't know how anymore. And that's why they're being duped into participating in their own demise under the false pretense of doing the exact opposite. And that's a painful thing to come to terms with. And truthfully, the quote good people are the ones that feel it the most, because they get up every day and they take pride in, I'm protecting my family. I'm you know, it's important to me that they're healthy, so I'm getting them vaccinated. And then they bring home an autistic child, and then they find out later they participated in making that happen. It should make people angry. But what the problem that I see far too often is, when you use the word ignorance, people automatically shut off because they think that you're calling them stupid. But the fact of the matter is that we have been denied the knowledge that we need to direct our free will for our own benefit, and we can't do it anymore. And that should make people angry, and they should seek to then reacquire the knowledge they need to do it properly, rather than just be mad that somebody said they don't have it.
This is true, and what I find is interesting is that people, they'll get, it's sort of like the dog in the electrified cage. He keeps getting electrified and he can't escape the cage, and even when you open the cage door, he still doesn't try to escape. And I used to look after autistic boys, so I know what this kind of mentality breeds. I've seen, I've come up to them and said that my friend Catherine Smith, who does this magazine here, the New Zealand Journal of Natural Medicine, has a whole lot of herbal remedies and other things, you know, because some autism is curable. And yes. Not a single one of them took us up on the offer, because they'd seen so many specialists and so many doctors that couldn't do nothing and got their hopes up that they extinguished their hope completely. We'll be right back after the break at VinnieEastwoodShow.com. Ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that realizes nowhere to run to, baby. There's nowhere to hide from a new world order. What are you going to do? Try to escape the planet? And my very special guests, James C. Horak and Crystal Clark, and we're having a discussion over the break about leadership and what it actually means. And, you know, you both raise very important points that I believe bear repeating. One being, James, the point that you made is that leaders are actually supposed to be there to inspire, to give people, something to look forward to, you know, keep morale high and so on and so forth. And, Crystal, you made a very profound point that you don't want to stay in this leader-follower paradigm anymore, because that's the reason why we're in such a bad shape, and that's how we've been so easily divided and conquered. Because if people don't know how to lead themselves, all the New World Order has to do is take out their leader, and boom, they become disparate masses again. And that is
really very, very true. And I'm a big believer.
And my point was that a good leader isn't somebody who bosses everybody around and says that I'm your leader, obey me. A good leader is somebody who recognizes the potential in the people that follow them and teach them how to harness their own personal power and abilities so that they don't need to be led anymore and become their own leaders. That's the kind of person I am. And in fact, just yesterday, I took it upon myself to go out with a couple of people to a child, youth, and family services office. It's the equivalent of the CPS of New Zealand. You know, they're basically a government sanctioned pedophile ring. What was interesting is that there were only three of us there. We had two cameras, a megaphone, and one sign, and there were three of us. We all took turns. One of us held the sign while one of us filmed and while one of us spoke and rotated until the point where all of us had gotten to speak. All of us had gotten to hold the sign. All of us had gotten to hold the cameras. And I was the one who was in possession of all that technology. And incidentally, it had all been donated to me. Now, these two other people that I was with had both had their children kidnapped by these particular organizations. And I tried to help by doing what I do best, by getting out there, making sure that their voices are amplified and making sure that what they say is recorded and then put online. And all three of us were really elated and felt really, really good about ourselves when we finished the protest, even though two dozen people had said they'd turn up and didn't, because we actually said what the truth really was. We actually took action. That was something that was really encouraging, and that's what I try to do every day of my life, is give a platform to somebody who doesn't have it. Now, Crystal's having a little bit of a problem with her connection there. Now, in terms of leadership in and of itself, James, what do you think is the problem within the UFO community and so on and so forth that's really preventing disclosure or preventing it from actually becoming a really big, powerful movement to get the truth out there?
The cottage industry, the people that are making money off of it, and that eventually become corrupted because they're protecting a thing, just like some of the conventional scientists. Somebody comes along with something to offer that is answering, resolving more anomaly, explaining, giving more clarity. If they didn't come up with the idea, there goes their book sales, there goes whatever. So what they try to do is they try to run that person off. They criticize them. They do all sorts of things. I've seen it happen over and over again. And meanwhile, they're marking time by this illusion of a smoking gun. The UFO ET phenomena is so diversified. These people are coming from all over this part of the galaxy. They're here for different reasons, but none are hostile. They're interested in what's going on here because it's a unique situation. They've never seen a species, an intelligent species, with split consciousness before. Their civilizations are very tame. They don't have the intensity. They don't have the creativity. They don't have the music, so many other things. And this right now is the greatest drama of the galaxy, maybe even the universe. And so, you know, if I could sell seats to it, I. But that's the situation. And to see how this is coming out, the question here is, and we talked about, and you talked about an experiment, about it being, well, yeah, of course it is. The universe is constantly looking for variation. Constantly, it has a consciousness, and it wants to see what fits in with what best. And it's looking in, and it sees this split consciousness. Can this be tamed? Can this be civilized? What power it has, what beauty it has. If only it can, you can take and remove the collective and individual aberrancy that's there. If you can do that, we have a prime candidate for the extended community on a scale that we've never had before, because this is unique. The split consciousness is a unique thing. Before, when it existed, it was removed very quickly when it occurred due to inconstant gravity wave and a number of other possibilities. But when it was removed, because it was considered a flaw. This has persisted so long that we have seen an individuation occur that it tends to be new and vital and vibrant, and to have many qualities that people that have become civilized and developed a high level of culture, they also have a downside to that. And it's a loss of the vitality. It's a loss of the creativity, the intensity that is so necessary to produce really spectacular art, music, and, you know, even entertainment. So you have a number of people that are out there that want to see you succeed and don't want to see this come, and they have bought you time. Because the farmer lineages on this planet weren't given the consideration. And part of the extenuating circumstance they recognized is the presence of EBs, extra biological entities that are called the Greys, that are not species, but are nothing but drones, but they are problematic. And they're used by black ops here.
Can I ask... you, Crystal, in terms of leadership within the UFO community and what holds it back, I mean, it depends what you focus on, right? Like, if you focus on the negative, your outlook is going to become negative. And it strikes me that both of you have a very positive outlook. Why is that? What is it that inspires you to stay so positive?
Because we know what's possible. We know what's possible. And that there's no good reason not to have it. And so we want to try to remove all the blocks that keep us from achieving it, I think. You know, the UFO community, here's the thing. It doesn't matter if you're talking about UFOs or you're talking about chemtrails or you're talking about abductions or black ops or vaccines or fluoride. It's the same people behind all of it. All of it. So we have to recognize that, and we have to begin to ask, who are they, and we have to begin to hold them accountable. And I think James would agree that one of the first steps for us in removing aberrancy is to stop looking the other way. We actually have to handle things, you know. We just can't do it anymore. And too many people are comfortable and are paid very, very well, especially in the alternative community, to look the other way. In fact, to encourage others to look the other way, because whom does that serve in the end? And a really good analogy, I think, is the Jonestown Massacre. Are you familiar with that?
Yes, I am. It didn't have anything to do with Alex Jones, did it?
No, but not exactly. But here's the thing. So people that didn't want to deal with reality decided they would just go off in the woods and live in their own little reality. And one man, the leader, conned all of the followers into committing suicide. And these people gave the poison to their children first. And this is what people have to really grasp, because aren't we doing the exact same thing when we take our children and we vaccinate them and we put fluoride in their baby bottles? And, you know, we are being duped into participating in our own demise, so we can no longer live in a world where only the, quote, smart people have all the answers and the rest of us are just so dumb and useless overbreeders. We have to let them take care of everything, because their idea of taking care of everything is destroying nature to destroy us, and that's not survivable. And I know that deep down, every person on this planet, especially if they have children, want to live, and they want to live right. But they can't expect somebody else to do it for them. You know, who can we turn to? Who's going to come and save us? Well, can't we save us? You know, do we have to wait for Jesus Christ to come back and fix it? Are we really that inept that we can't do it?
Yeah, I mean, the whole reason why you haven't been saved, bro, is because you're waiting for somebody to save you. Look. How much gets accomplished when you do nothing and wait around for things to happen? Nothing!
Exactly. It's that phrase, I've tried nothing and I'm all out of ideas. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. It's fixable. It's fixable to a point. And I'm really glad that people are waking up, because we are nearing that point. There is a threshold that once we cross, coming back from will be almost impossible. And we're being pushed farther and farther and farther in that direction. Once we get there, we're toast. But we aren't there yet. Until we get there, and we'll know when we're there. There won't be any questions about it. We aren't there. It's fixable. I mean, my God, if you really care about people, why would you not do something to change it? You know? It doesn't make any sense. So I personally don't see the difference between a New Age community that's conning everybody into not actually doing anything, or a religion that's conning people into not doing anything, or Jim Jones telling everybody, well, just lay down and die. What's the difference?
Did you ever have like an aha moment, like, oh my God, I actually have the power, like He-Man, to drive back scumbaggery, to do what's right, and to play my part in making humanity go down a path that is actually beneficial?
Well, you know, I've never not done my part. And so for me, it's a strange thing to encounter repeatedly so many people that won't. I can't understand it, truthfully. I don't get it.
Yeah. Kind of like how a good, decent, honest person doesn't understand the mentality of a psychopath. And it's like, why would they do something like that? Well, the only reason why you don't know, bro, is because you're not a ruthless criminal sociopathic scumbag. That's why you don't understand it. Because you're a good, honest, decent person. Just like a good, honest, decent person, really, just I don't know. They could go around and they think everybody's like them. It's like, oh, sorry, bro. There really has been a split in humanity. And then is this what you're talking about, James, when you talk about split consciousness, how humanity is capable of great compassion and great violence?
Well, the this is the ambivalence that's part of it, but basically, the split consciousness is the subconscious and conscious minds having totally different asset. The subconscious is associated with survival. It's associated with the thalamus, the primitive brain. It is capable of absolutely total recall, perfect recall. It is absolutely able to distinguish the slightest falsehood, and it corrects every lie, every dissembling of the conscious mind in reverse speech. It's correcting it. And not only does it say this is a lie, it tells what is the truth. So that with this aspect, this struggle going on between the subconscious and conscious, the conscious mind is not employing the direct abilities that it's capable of, because it's in this war. You have a person trying to figure out a problem. He's got to worry about, well, did I do it right? Did I do this? We call a person a genius because they're free of this in their particular specialty. We had at one time on this planet men that were capable of doing that in anything they tackled. Michelangelo, Leonardo da Vinci, Galileo Galilei, Copernicus. These were men who were capable to turn that kind of genius on anything. But we have a society today where these men are avoided.
Okay, well, hold on a second. We want to talk about this after the break. We've only got one more segment. Man, I wish those feet wouldn't come up so abruptly. And cut you off in the middle of the speech. We'll be right back after the break, ladies and gentlemen, with James DeC, Horek, and Crystal Clark. You can get the archives to this at thevinnyeastwoodshow.com and watch the YouTube versions at youtube.com/Mr. News Guerrilla Media. Back in just a few minutes, folks. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the show that's all about jamming a big monkey wrench into the mechanisms of the New World Order and its mind control operations that try to convince you that you're not an incredibly powerful individual that can change the world. I can assure you that history is literally full of people that by themselves have changed the world. Indeed, the only people who really have. Understand that and understand it good and proper, ladies and gentlemen. You are the one who can change the world, if only you would believe it. My very special guests are Crystal Clark and James C. Horak. And we've only got a few minutes left. And James, I wanted you to finish your point about these. You were mentioning off a whole number of names of these men who are capable of shedding their genius onto whatever kind of aspects they wanted. and the accomplishments therein that really kind of sent echoes throughout humanity. Because I thought it was quite encouraging.
Yes, and the only reason we don't have them today is because there are stopgap measures that have been employed in education and vaccines and other things that have kept this flower from blossoming. But we have today, we have kids that, if given the direction, might have that genius. The sad thing about our science and technology is that everything's compartmentalized. Everything comes under some kind of security classification. Nobody has the overview. So if we did have a genius, if we did have someone that was capable of taking something and running with it and creating something new, they wouldn't have the overview. They wouldn't have the tools to do it with. They wouldn't have the opportunity to do it because everyone is afraid of corporate secrets. They're afraid of satisfying the restraints of compartmentalization, which is useful to those that want to control technology, want to keep anything from being invented that will challenge cartels, corporations, and their hold on utilities, their hold on oil, their hold on this, and their hold on that across the board. This began with Edison. Everybody thinks that Edison was so wonderful. He wasn't wonderful. He had a school of inventors, just like Maupassant had a school of short story writers, and he did more to help industrialists suppress technology than otherwise. That's why he had so many problems with Tesla. He cheated Tesla out of $100,000 when he challenged Tesla to build one of these transformer stations that would up the voltage of direct current, because he wouldn't listen to Tesla when Tesla said, I can convert this to alternating current, and you won't have to worry about losing voltage when you go up a skyscraper. So that's not very bright. We give Edison far too much credit. He was in the way of technological advance, not the other way around.
So, was Thomas Edison the one who invented the light bulb, right? Ironically, he wasn't that bright.
Not really. No. And, you know, we give Marconi the credit for inventing the radio, and he didn't. There are just a number of things that came up. We give Teller, Edward Teller, the credit for inventing the cyclotron, and he didn't. His graduate student did.
Hey, and in fact, this is something that's happening in the scientific community big time nowadays, is a genius will come up with a great invention, and then they'll go to their professor or the head of the dean or whatever the frack, or somebody who they really respect in the scientific community, and they get surprised when the mother fracker steals that off them.
Well, that's what graduate students have to accept. They're in there to get their meal ticket, which is a master's or a PhD, and they have to put up with all this crap from... See, every graduate student has what's called a committee, and that's a certain number of professors who have tenure who... They'll even tell him how to write. You know, he may be proficient in writing or whatever, but he has got to deal with, in many cases, a self-important pedant. And I've seen this. I've been a graduate student, and I know what I'm talking about. So, and then you say, for instance, you get through all the political aspect of it. You have to go in and defend your dissertation if you're a PhD candidate. And, of course, they can throw all kinds of obstacles in your path if they just don't want you to get that meal ticket.
Now, this reminds me of when I was in university, and I don't know about you, James, but I always coasted through high school. I coasted through university, you know, just getting C averages without even trying. And then they gave me the option of doing an essay, and one of the options for the essay was anti-television discourse, and I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, that's my bag. And I was like,
you got an A, didn't you?
Let me finish. For the first time ever, I read source material. I put bibliographies, notes, and things of that nature all through this essay. I showed it to my friend's dad, who was a English professor at the university, and he said it was just brilliant. And they gave me a D.
Really?
And that was the moment that I realized that it was the opinion of the marker that television was inherently good for everybody, that my analysis disagreed with, even though all of the evidence that I just basically, this is what I thought, you know, it was evil because of such and such and the short attention spans and blah, 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 blah. And it turns out that all of the source material that they gave us to read actually proved what my opinion was. And I put it down and they gave me a D. And it was at that moment, that very moment, that I realized, this is BS. This whole university system is complete BS. You know how many times I've actually found some kind of a usefulness out of my 2 years of university? Like one bit of knowledge or any bit of knowledge that has actually ever proven useful in any situation at all? None.
Well, of any kind. Vincent, I disagree. You have the knowledge that it doesn't matter. So you're not opining.
University didn't teach me that. University didn't teach me that. I taught me that.
No, it did teach you that because you had that experience and learned from it.
Yeah. Unintended consequence, maybe.
Yeah, well, look around you. All the people that think
like
that
university
they are...
actually accidentally taught me something.
It didn't intend to.
Yeah. It's like, oh, bro, now I've figured this out. And I haven't finished my third year of university, and I'm not gonna, because I'm learning a heck of a lot more information off of people like you.
Vinny, we're having too much fun. Do you know that?
Yeah, that's always been my problem. It's like, that was the thing that also really bugged me is, you know, just thinking back on it now, how much fun have I had on this show learning really incredible, interesting things that are actually really quite profound and teach me lessons about who I am as a person and how the universe truly works and that kind of thing. You know, like these things I feel are really important, and I've had a lot of fun doing it. And I didn't have any fun or find virtually any interest out of 2 full years of university work, regardless of the subjects that I was studying. I think I did like take 12 different subjects that were like completely different, you know, from Japanese to world history to communication studies and film and media and everything like that. And it was all boring.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of the agenda of higher education, is not to teach you critical thinking. It's actually to teach you to be critical of people who can actually think.
Yes.
and that starts with public education. You know, that starts in the first grade of public education. They have a syllabus, and anybody that is a great teacher that can inspire is constrained by that syllabus. That's why they quit.
It's more like a succubus.
Yes, it is.
That's a really good pun there, isn't it?
Syllabus succubus.
Yeah.
We need to – how about some lyrics, a song? They got me with the syllabus succubus.
Yeah, I mean, the syllabus does succubus quite a lot. And
yes, I was waiting for that.
This is how much the syllabus sucked you, boss. Okay,
yeah,
so we've only got 1 minute left to go, and I would like to give out your websites. Sorry, I haven't remembered to do that in the first place. So emvsinfo.blogspot.com, that's emvsinfo.blogspot.com. That's James's website. drowninginabsurdity.wordpress.com. That's drowninginabsurdity.wordpress.com is Crystal's website. She also has another one, The Soul Society. That's Soul, S-O-L, thesoulsociety.com. And we've got about maybe, 20 seconds each to wrap up and say one, you know, profoundly encouraging thing before we finish up the show. It's been a pleasure.
Crystal?
Well, thank you for having us, and I just encourage people to recognize that they are capable of of creating the future they know that they deserve. They just actually have to do it.
And James? And I can't help feel like I'm doing this. Oh, well. All right. Maybe that's the thing of it. All right, ladies and gentlemen. It's been a great week. And thank you very much to Mel, the associate producer, for she's put in a lot of work. And the very reason why most of the guests have shown up this week and the reason why I've actually been able to read off their bios and they have prepared questions and things like that isn't because I've been working very hard, isn't because I've been looking at their websites and so on and so forth and doing the studying and the real actual hard work. It's because she's been doing it all for me, you know? You work as a team. You do what, for each other what you can and you play to your strengths. And I just want to say to you, Mel, I am so very, very grateful for the opportunity to interview all of these wonderful people you've organized for us, especially you, Crystal and James. Thank you very much. And we'll see you again sometime, ladies and gentlemen, at the VinnieEastwoodShow.com.